Well, good evening. I hope everybody is well. I know news is a combination of hopefulness and despair. People are continuing to get sick as others are getting better. And we are in a state of mixed feeling as we begin to feel the decline over the peak while people are still suffering. And we obviously have those who are struggling and fighting. We wish them full, speedy recoveries, comfort, and all the possible aid that they can get from our friends, from God, from Providence. And we hope to see each other in person very soon. And we have them in mind, and our learning this evening should be to aid their recovery. And we turn to a subject which began in earnest about 4 days ago, depending on whether you've counted this evening already, the Omer. And of course, that is the perfect day we're aiming for now. In 1972, you may hear, there was a song released by Lewis Allen Reed, the son of Sidney Rabinowitz. In 1972, and it was called A Perfect Day. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the song. He was an American songwriter, poet, and band leader. And when he died, the culture secretary of the Vatican tweeted out some of the lyrics of this song, A Perfect Day, How Glad I Am I Spent It With You, A Perfect Day. I don't know the rest of the lyrics. But apparently it has been understood for a long time to actually refer to the capacity for drugs to provide us with a sense of perfection, to numb us, to anesthetize us to the troubles of life, and in that state of delirium and distraction, to provide us with a sense of human perfection. And the culture secretary of the Vatican had to then go on to deny that he condones the use of drugs, but he just liked the song, which of course is a danger when sharing lyrics of songs that we don't know or understand. But it is that sense of perfection, that aspiration to achieve a perfect day, which I'm sure is on our minds very heavily at the moment. Our day seems so riddled and shot through with imperfection on so many levels in so many ways. And the Omer is going to be our prism to discover how halachic life, how chazal, how our system of living can tilt us toward that perfection. So we begin with the biblical source, the origin of this mitzvah, and you shall count on the day after Shabbat, which of course in this context means Yom Tov, not Shabbat. The day in which you bring the Omer offering, and these three words are going to be the key three words for the next 40 minutes of our shiur, which we will read through the prism of its legal halachic consequences and then through its ethical, moral, theological, and philosophical consequences too. Sheva Shabbatot Tmimot, which translates loosely as seven perfect weeks. Tiyena, it will be. We have an obligation to count seven perfect weeks. And if we put interpretive weight on that phrase, seven perfect weeks, Rashi, in the wake of our sages, suggests the following about ritual practice. Tmimot tiyena, Rashi says in source 2 on your screen. Melamed shematchil umoneh miba'arev. This teaches us in theory, if we look back at the pasuk, it says, miyom aviyachem, from the day on which the Omer offering is brought, which it was brought during the day. So one might have thought, when does one count the Omer? With sunrise. You could think about alot, nates, you could coincide the counting with the perfect vision of the sun rising over the horizon, and yet being told that these weeks have to be perfect. Rashi says it teaches us we have to count from night. Shimlokein einam tmimot. If we don't count from the night, the weeks don't possess that perfection. This poetic expression of perfect weeks translates liturgically and ritually into our need to count as early as possible so that we don't neglect or ignore or cut out from the time. The weeks have to be full from beginning to end. And this is based on source 3, which is the Gemara in Menachot, that says, How do we find 7 perfect weeks? It could have just said, count 7 weeks. What is this perfection? The only time one truly finds these perfect arithmetic weeks is when one counts from the night. Which leads us to a question. When do many of us in an ordinary year count the omen? I invite you to unmute yourself, to answer questions, to participate, to raise questions. If you have your own, when do we usually count the Omer on a usual year? When do those who frequent shuls usually count?
After Maariv.
After Maariv.
Excellent. At Maariv, and even more pivotally, after Maariv. Usually, on an average year, we'd come to shul, and especially on Yom Tov when we've got more crowded, we finish Maariv and we say the bracha, and we count Sfira after Maariv. And we've just said that we want to tilt towards perfection as much as humanly possible. So how can it be, as following the Shulchan Aruch in Source 4, Bilal Sheni Achat Tfilat Maariv, on the second night of Pesach, after Maariv, we defer, we delay, we seem to dent that perfection by counting after we've davened. Why don't we say, before we turn to Vuhurachum, we're going to count Sfira to Omer. Everybody rise, count the Omer, and then shift into Maariv. We seem to be almost defacing that perfection quite brazenly at shul on a usual night and this evening, as I did yesterday. I will count at the end of Maariv. At 9:15, we'll have Maariv, and I'll count Sfira at the end. For those who haven't counted, that's a great time to count as well. Say Amen, and then say your own bracha. Why am I deferring it? Why am I delaying it? And there are 2 suggestions to this in the sources that you have that just appeared on your screen. And source number 5, the Bi'a Halacha suggests that there is a debate. One of 2 ways to understand this deferral of perfection, one of which suggests that we have a mistaken premise, and the other of which has an interesting argument to make. In source number 5, Katav b'sefer Moruktsia, in the work Moruktsia, it says Tam de sofrim achah tefila. The reason that we count after davening mishum de bedorat harishonim is because there is a historical contingency. Apologies, excuse the phone call. There is a historical contingency that we may not be aware of, that in the early days hayaminag lehitpalel aravit kodem halayla, they would daven Maariv before night started. They would start Maariv while it was still light, and then finish uvesiyum ha-Maariv ha-tchila ha-layla. They would coincide the conclusion to the evening prayers with sunset and the beginning of the night. V'az ha-yusofrim b'din b'tchilat ha-layla. And that's why they deferred the blessing to the end, precisely to get that perfection. They would time Maariv to finish as the sun went down, and then they would say Sfira to catch nighttime. That's one view. Just simply put, the premise stays intact. We always seek that nightly perfection, 7 whole weeks. Second view, Achen, however, B'chok Yaakov. In a different work, B'chok Yaakov, it says, D'midina tzarich lahakdim kriyat shamot tfilashu hutadir. There is another principle at stake here. We have a clash of values. On the one hand, our biblical verse says we need to attain perfection, 7 whole weeks. But that value clashes with another value. And that value is Tadir Kodem. Anyone know the loose translation of Tadir Kodem?
Regular is first.
Excellent. In a contest between that which is frequent and that which is infrequent, the frequent wins. Common supersedes the rare, the routine overrides the scarce, infrequential calculus. It is the frequent that always comes first. And what's more frequent, Maariv or Sfirat HaOmer? Hopefully, Maariv. We count 49 times. We daven either 365 or 354, depending on how you count the days of the year. But it's certainly more frequent. So really, he says that there is a principle at which davening has to come first, and we have to defer perfection. We have that idealist conception of needing 7 whole weeks, but there is a clash of values in which Maariv has to supersede, and we have to defer perfection. Having said that, in source number 6, the Shevet Halevi, a contemporary figure who wrote Responsa, says, hold on a minute. So why don't we all have a reminder set on our phones, on our watches, in our calendars, that as soon as night arrives, we should count the Omer, and we'll daven in shul when we daven in shul. You only have to supersede the rare with the frequent if they clash, if they're in contest. But if you don't set up this clash, this contrast between Tadir and Eino Tadir, if you don't say, okay, everybody come to shul at 9:15 and we're going to have to debate between whether we count first or whether we daven first, just count as soon as night falls and daven a little later. Why do you have to set up this contest? And he says, actually, there is a fascinating positive value here. Not just the contest between frequent and infrequent. There is a positivity laced in our deferring perfection, and it admits human imperfection in a way that brings us all together. In the third line of Psalm 6, he says, "Lelamed zchut al Yisrael." Let me try to find a positive angle, to find a merit in this act, which is pervasive, almost universal in Jewish life, that we delay counting till after Maariv. This is what he says. I'm sure many of us can testify to this truth, that counting the Omer is easy to forget, precisely because it is infrequent. All sorts of things in our schedules can disrupt it. In previous years, if people were flying and missed Maariv at shul, often they'd forget. Sometimes you have a meeting, you get home late, you daven Maariv. Forgetting to count the Omer is as routine as Maariv is. And if we were to insist on capturing this idealist perfection as soon as night falls, and then everybody would come to daven later, and we wouldn't count at shul, many, many people would forget to count. Al kain, therefore, hanhigu shiyisapru bizman shiyisibu mitpalalim, therefore we say the bracha together when we daven Maariv. So we have to set up this contest between frequent and infrequent in a bid to account for our imperfection, our ability to forget to count. And what is buried in this idea for the Shevet HaLevi is, when we say Maariv, and as we will this evening, daven at 9:15 Maariv, and delay that perfect calculus of 7 weeks, we are confessing our imperfections as people and our dependence on each other. We are saying, yes, in an ideal world, we would seek perfection. We would count at nightfall, but actually we understand that on our own, by ourselves, as the sun sets, as we stand as isolated souls, we are riddled with imperfection. And so many of us are liable to forget that we take on ourselves as a community to defer that aspiration for isolated perfection and come together to admit our individual imperfections to count as one. So the Shevet HaLevi sees in something as mundane, something as arcane, something as liturgical as the contest between Maariv and Sfirat HaOmer, the confession of individual imperfection and the power of communal dependence, that we come together to count as one, to be as a single people who have each other's backs, which of course could not be made more explicit than the behavior that we are seeing today by healthcare workers, and we exhibit by ourselves, by community members who are supporting each other and coming together. In source number 7, the Be'er Hetiv suggests that actually, in trying to set up this deferral of perfection, we're also exhibiting another value. In source 7, he quotes a Shalah, the Shnei Luchot HaBrit, a mystic halachic figure, who says, "B'makom shesh chabura shemitpalalim Maariv bizmano." Actually, when we have a group of people davening Maariv as a group, ra'oi litchaber lehem b'mei sfira, we should try to do Sfirat HaOmer as part of Maariv, even if it means deferring perfection. Why? Ki az mitzvah goreret mitzvah, because then what happens, we set up this exhibition where davening, where prayer leads to another blessing, where good deed produces another good deed, bizmano, mitzvah kriyat shema, bizmano, sfira b'tzibur. We follow one after the other. And we prefer the mystic halachic figure, the Shla suggests, we prefer that isolated perfection of a single good deed to leave a little imperfection in that deed and see it as an influence that snowballs morality and ethics forwards. So that's the question about why we delay counting the Omer at Maariv. Again, on our screen number one, we had the biblical source that says perfection is to be aspired for. We need to count as early as possible to get seven perfect wheat. On the second screen, we entertain the issue of why we delay it then till after Maariv, and we solve that question. Now that we've solved why it can be delayed a little with Maariv, we have to turn on a question which I was going to address in a very different universe about a month ago in our shul, which is what happens if we daven Maariv, as apparently the early generations did, before true night. Now, when does true night fall? In halachic terminology, when is true night fall?
When you see two stars.
When you see three stars, which is in rabbinic terminology, Tzeit HaKochavim, the emergence of stars. That timeline is adhered to when it comes to taking out Shabbat, taking out Yom Tov, which you'll note is much later than the time we daven Maariv the night before. On Friday night, we'll daven Maariv about an hour before Shabbos goes out. How are we davening Maariv earlier? And it turns out there is another measure. Ben Hashmashot, as you see on your screen right now, twilight, dusk, that time between night and day where it appears to be dark and light at once is already a step towards nightfall, where it is permissible to say Maariv. Many shuls, this moment where the sun sinks below the horizon, anyone know what that moment is called?
Yeah.
Shkia, lishkoa means to sink. So Shkia, the moment the sun recedes beneath the horizon, is when many of us will say Maariv. On an ordinary night in Y-I-J-E, we would daven Mincha at a time where we have just enough time to finish Mincha. The rabbi would then say a few words for a couple minutes, and then as soon as Shkia comes, we daven Maariv. For many, we make a point of repeating Kriyat Shema later once true night has fallen at Seit Kochavim, because we didn't really say Shema at night, but it was early enough to say Maariv. So now comes the question. We need perfection when it comes to counting the Omer. We need to count as early as possible. But can we count earlier than true nightfall, or is that on the wrong day? And it seems here, if you look in the source 8 on your screen, I hope my face isn't blocking it. I can't see what you can see. Is my face blocking it?
No.
Okay, great. He says, this is Tosfot in Menachot. Nira de Basafek Chashecha. It seems to me that at a time around Shkia, when it is a doubtful time, whether it is truly night, by Tzeit Kochavim, when the stars are out, we're confident it's nightfall, halachically speaking. When the sun sinks beneath the horizon, there are still rays of light that appear. There is still light in the west. It's not truly certain night. He says, Yachol Levarech, one can say the bracha and count the Omer. Vein Sarach Lahamtim Adshe Vadailan, and you don't have to wait until true night. And this is where shul practice becomes very pertinent. At the shul I was at in Chicago, my understanding is in past years at YIJE, the practice shifted from the rest of the year. The rest of the year, you daven mincha on time to get right finished before Shkia. Then you wait a couple of minutes and do Maariv. But this time of year in YIJE, there would then be a pause. And the rabbi wouldn't speak for 2, 3, or 4 minutes. He would speak for 22, 23, or 24 minutes. And of course, Rabbi Hochberg has the power to possess attention for that length of time. And I was getting increasingly nervous that 20 minutes of you having to pay attention to me every night may not be successful. And my understanding is there are some groups of people who found it very difficult, not just in this shul, in shuls where this practice is maintained. And actually, the majority practice in shuls, I spoke to Rabbi Aryeh Leibowitz and others in the area, is to daven mincha Maariv as usual, count the Omer at the end of Maariv as you usually would, even though it's not true nightfall. And this is precisely what Tosfot says. And Tosfot doesn't just say you can. He says you can hear. End of the line there. Kiven shud sveik ad rabbanan, because it's a safek. And counting the Omer nowadays is midrabbanan. There's a rabbinic obligation to count the Omer. And this is where another issue when it comes to the Omer becomes complicated. How many people here say hineni before they count Sfirat HaOmer? Hineni muchanum zuman l'kayem. What's the next few words? L'kayem? Mitzvat aseh. Behold, hineni. I am prepared to fulfill the positive biblical obligation. Now, there are a number of people who refuse to say that because most of us view Sfirat HaOmer nowadays as rabbinic. How can I stand there and say, I'm now going to achieve a biblical obligation when in fact it's rabbinic? So some people don't say hineni, some people do and say, even if it's not biblical, it's a nice thing to say. Why not? We could all do with such things to be the focus of our attention. And there's an argument about that. But the assumption is it's rabbinic nowadays. So if you've got a suffix about whether it's nighttime, suffix drabanan, what do we say? Suffix drabanan?
Lakula.
Sol's on top of it this evening. Suffix drabanan, we go lenient. So Tosfot says you can count early. But then he says va'od. And he says, and not only can we do this because we're in a position of doubt and we go lenient with rabbinic law, he suggests that it's preferable. Omer da afilu b'yom samach lachashecha. Perhaps during the daytime, when we are edging toward night, but it is not yet night, adif, it is better, mishum tmimut, because we seek perfection. And if we want true perfection, we should aim for more perfect than perfect. We should be idealists and capture even potential time, even possible time, because if we're in doubt, that means maybe it's not night, so maybe I shouldn't say the bracha, but maybe it is night, which means I can make my count even more perfect if I grab this time. If I dedicate the next half hour of twilight, of dusk, towards my count, I can capture more of the day. I can be that idealist who says to me, mut, perfection of time is adif, even for time of doubt. That's the way Tosfot reads it, and he's got a very powerful sway on halachic life, suggesting we should maybe count the Omer before nightfall. However, the Ran, Rabbeinu Nissim, had a different view on this subject, and he says as follows in source 9. Just look at the underlined bit. Ein ze nachon. What Tosfot says is not right. Sheyachnitz asmo besafek lechatchila. You're right, Tosfot, that when it comes to matters of doubt, we lean towards leniency. But one shouldn't enter doubt on purpose. One shouldn't say, I'm now going to say the bracha during a time of doubt because it's midrabanan, so we can be lahakel. To be lenient is a concession at a time of need, usually bidiavad, which literally translates as bidiavad, if it had happened, if it was done. If you're caught and you have no choice, we say it's okay. You're not sure whether you said a bracha that you rabbinically were obligated to say. Lahakel, don't do it. Sit back. But now Tosfot's saying you should go ahead and proactively violate this doubt. The Ran says that can't be done. Ve'imishum t'mimut. And he says, and if you think, Tosfot, you idealist, that you can capture more perfection by counting early, ein lahachmi b'tmimut bizman hazeh shehu midrabanan. He uses his own argument against him and says, we're living in a rabbinic age in the sense that this obligation is rabbinic. So why are you trying to attain a rabbinic perfection at the cost of violating a rabbinic leniency? You should just avoid the whole argument, wait till nightfall, do what shuls have been doing for centuries, leave a 25-minute gap between Mincha and Maariv at the risk of everybody falling asleep or davening elsewhere or going home and coming back later. Kol ha-sofer b'layla t'mimut karinam bay, counting any time at night is called perfection. So what we have distilled here in these two views, we have Tosfot first, what we'll call the idealist who seeks perfection even in the possible and says we should count at a time of doubt precisely to capture those possible minutes in our count. And then we have the realist, let's call him the Ran in this instance, who says, look, as long as you count during dark hours, you've hit perfection. Lower your standards. Let's limit perfection, that not every instant, not every minute, not every second, not every hour needs to be captured in our count. Count at night, not during the day. That's all that's needed. Now we have this debate set up. What do we do in practice? And if I were going to shift the custom in shul, which we have been deprived of the capacity to do here this year, next year, please God, we'll have that opportunity to face this question. on what basis could I say, we're not going to wait 20 minutes anymore, we're going to daven mincha, we'll wait for shkia, we'll daven maariv, we'll say the bracha, and do what Tosfot says. Have a look at source 10, this is the Torah. The Torah says as follows, Arvit achar ha-tfilah matchilin lispor ha-omer, after davening at nighttime, we count the omer. Then look at the end of the line, underline, uzman ha-sfira, and the time at which one can count, mitchilat ha-laila, from beginning of the night, afilu ena laila mamash, even if it's not really night yet. El savik ha-sheicha yecholin lesaper lispor, he follows Tosfot. This is a Torah, an immensely authoritative medieval halachic work that says you can count, like Tosfot suggests, earlier in the day from Shkia, as soon as there is this Safek Chashecha. Now, if we turn to source 11, the Shulchan Aruch, who was later in time, but perhaps more authoritative in concrete Jewish life because it was so pervasive, he says, Im ta'u bayom hama'onenu baruchu asfera ta'oma chodron lispot ben kishatach shech. Let's say you counted at 3 in the afternoon for the next day. It's not even doubtful night. What do you do? He says you should count again at night because it didn't mean anything. It counted for nothing, literally. But then he adds, v'hamadaktikim, and those who are precise in their religious life, einam sofrim ela b'tzedek ha'chavim, they wait to count until nightfall. They do what some shuls have done for centuries, they do what Rabbeinu Nissim advocates, v'chein ra'ui la'asot, and the Shulchan Aruch says, that's really what we should do. We should really aim to wait 20 minutes until we say Maariv and count at the end once it is true nightfall, because perfection in an age of rabbinic reenactment, when our Omer is rabbinic in nature, should not be compromised on the sacrifice of doubt. That's his suggestion. In Source 12, in the Mishnah Brura really just elucidates his point. And then at the very bottom, we'll look at the last line on this screen. He says, really, this is what we should do. Ratzaloma, that is to say, lechatchila, really, we should wait and say bracha on Sfirat HaOmer once it's fully night. Tam umikol makam, however, b'di aved in barech bin hashmashat yatsa. But if you did it the other way, you are yotzei. And then this last half line is crucial to practice in a number of communities. Umetzaded, however, we should say denachon sheyachsov yispo b'tzeda kochavim bli bracha. They should count again at night. And when I spoke to Rabbi Aryeh Leibowitz about this in what seems like a different decade, about a month and a half ago, he said, yes, it's not a big deal to shift this practice. Most shuls, they'll keep Minchah and Maariv at the standard time. They count the Omer after Maariv, and then they remind people, just as they remind people to say Kriya Shema again later, they remind people to count later without a bracha, to send out an email or to tell people to set themselves reminders, etc. And that would have been the view that I would have taken. Now, we're going to take a little sidestep on your screen for a moment. This isn't a crucial, pivotal question. We've finished, in many ways, the concrete, practical ramifications of our discussion this evening, and we're now going to take a lean towards the ethics and the moral messages of what is communicated by this practice. In Source 13, we have Rabbi Soloveitchik. This is what we would call a side note. Says, hold on a minute. If davening comes first, why do we count before we do Aleinu? Usually we'll count the Omer and then do Aleinu. You just told me, Tadir Ve'enu, Tadir, Tadir Kodem, and you do Aleinu all the time, not just every night like Maariv, do Aleinu every time you daven. So why shouldn't Aleinu come first? And he says, actually, there are those who practice to say Aleinu first and then do Sfira, and there are others who count and then do Aleinu. And really that depends on what Aleinu is, whether it's the end of davening or whether it's about permission to leave davening, which are two distinct things. One could look into that on their own time. We now turn to two figures who have come up in our Suda Shlishit discussions thus far this year of sacred texts under threat. On the one hand, we have Rabbi Yaakov Zvi Mecklenburg, the Katav Kabbalah, and we have Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch. And what you have here on your page is screen number 6, also symbolized by the hand that is capturing perfection with the sun shining through, to hit at the perfect day. And now what I want to do is, using these figures, Rav Mecklenburg and Rav Hirsch, who are hyper-attentive to syntax and punctuation and grammar and word choice, to look back to our biblical text from the start and consider two questions about the words and the formulation, about what is being suggested to us about how to attain that perfect day that Lou Reed sought and how we seek very differently. Now, Rav Mecklenburg poses a question which I will pose to you. How in Hebrew would you best say the word whole? W-H-O-L-E. Which word would you use to communicate whole?
Shalem.
Shalem.
Shalem. Shalem. Excellent. And in fact, I noted that word on Erev, first day of Yom Tov, when we look to say a bracha on something that is shalem, something that isn't broken, something that is whole, in the context of Yachatz. And Rav Mecklenburg asks, why here does the pasuk say Sheva Shabbatot Tmimot? Meharui Loma Shleimot Tiyene. It should have said Sheva Shabbatot Shleimot. You could have avoided all the ambiguities. What does the word tamim mean? Someone give me a translation of the word tamim.
Pure, innocent.
Pure, innocent. What does it mean at the Seder when we have four sons, one of whom is called Tam?
Simple.
Simple is often translated. It can mean perfect in many ways. That child that is Tam has a perfection and innocence who isn't tainted, but there's ambiguity to the term. He suggests actually the neat division between Shalem and Tamim is that Shalem means a quantitative wholeness, talking about food that is whole in terms of its quantity, and Tamim has this qualitative connotation to it. It connotes a sense of quality that is perfect, that is pure, that is innocent, untainted, unsullied. It doesn't speak about quantity or calculus. And here, when we're speaking about the Omer, we are speaking about something arithmetic. We're speaking about something precisely related to calculus. We're talking about counting whole weeks. So it should have said Shalem. It should have said Sheva Shabbatot Shalemot. And here he gives on the screen, I'm not going to read it all inside, examples of where Me'inyan Shleimut HaKamot, he's got examples there of quantitative uses of Shalem. Umi'inyan, it shouldn't say Shleimot there, so she Umi'inyan Tmimut HaIchut, and uses of Tamim where it is qualitative. He then said, Sadik Tamim Pa'alo Tamim Tiyeh Hashem Elokecha, gives numerous examples, Para Aduma Tmima, where we are speaking of quality, not quantity. And this is how he finishes. Look at the last paragraph of his comment here. Let's look at the last line, really. Shamachaven b'sfira, that the intention of our verse that is describing the seven perfect weeks, inena l'kamot hayamim levad, is precisely employing that term, tamim, and not shalem, because we are called, we are summoned, not just to seek the perfect day in terms of quantity and count as early as possible, gam el ichut hayamim, we should be seeking days that are perfect in quality. It should not just be the chance to count as early as possible, but to do good as much as possible, not just to have whole days, but to have perfect days, not just to be concerned with the arithmetic, but to be grounded in a Jewish pervasive ethic. That's the way that Ketav HaKabbalah uses the term of our verse, tamim, that these perfect weeks are not just in terms of their calculation, but also in terms of their behavioral expression and aspiration toward perfection. And we have one more source this evening before we'll take a short break and then turn tomorrow. We turn to Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch. And Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch asked another question about the expression Sheva Shabbatot Tmimot, seven perfect weeks. I've asked you how we say whole in Hebrew. I'll ask you another question. How do you say the word week in Hebrew?
Shavua.
Shavua. How do I know that Shavua is how we say week in Hebrew? Other than the fact that we do. Which holiday are we now counting towards?
Shavuot.
Shavuot. Weeks. What should the Pasuk have said? Sheva?
Shavuot.
Shavuot. Tmimot. Tihiyena. Seven perfect weeks it shall be. Why does it say seven perfect Shabbatot? And Rav Hirsch makes the following claim. If you look, in the middle paragraph, beginning with the word lo on your screen. Lo hare Shabbatot kahare Shavuot. The phrase, the term Shabbatot, which in this context means weeks, is not a synonym, does not mean the same thing as Shavuot. Shavuah, what is a Shavuah? Kol tkufa bat shivat yamim, any group of 7 days. If I tell you from 1 week from today, Tuesday to Tuesday, that would be a week. If I say I need you to do something for a week's worth of time, you could pick 7 Wednesdays and do something for 7 Wednesdays and clock in a week's worth of time. That's a Shavuah. Ilu Shabbat, but he says Shabbat, when it's translated as week, is a tkufa, but Shivat Yamim is a period of 7 days, Hamushutotet al Yom HaShabbat, which are all rooted in one of those days, in Shabbat. Umuvan Yafeh, and now it is well understood, Shahatorah Tu'una HaChana al Yedei HaShabbat, that the Torah wants us to build towards Shavuot, not by merely calculating 7 days in clusters, but to ground our behavior, to ground our attention, to ground each day in the Shabbat prior. Ki ha-Shabbat mechanechet, because Shabbat educates et ha-Adam, the human being, lichanea la-Hashem, to humble themselves before God, ulekabel b'simcha et ol avodato, and to accept the oath of their service with joy. And this is the way he would understand if I were to outside explain Rav Hirsch. When we are told Sheva Shabbatot Tmimot Tiyena, this is not just the abstraction that we need to count 7 weeks, 7 perfect, in Rav Mecklenburg's terms, calculations of 49 days, 7 clusters of 7 weekdays. We are to not have 7 perfect weeks, Shavuot, but Sheva Shabbatot, 7 perfect Shabbat cycles. That's how we would translate that word. I don't have the German translation in the Hirsch Chumash. I don't have the English translation with me either. I've got the volume of Bereishis here, but I don't have the volume we need in Vayikra. But his translation would be Sheva Shabbatot, not 7 weeks, but 7 Shabbat cycles is what we need. Here it's underlined at the top of the source on your screen. Yavru Shiva Ma'agle Shabbat Mimim. We need to pass over. We need to transpire 7 Shabbat cycles in perfection. Sheva pa'amim taf'il ha-Shabbat. 7 times Shabbat needs to exert et kocha ha-mechanech, its pedagogical force or influence, al yemei ha-melacha shebitchum hashpa'ata, on the work days that are under its jurisdiction. The way that we get from Pesach to Shavuot, which literally is a calculation of weeks, but also is known as Chag Ha'atzeret and other names, what carries us from freedom to responsibility, from liberty to our civilized mission, is not just 49 days, not just 7 weeks, but 7 cycles of Shabbat, in which our Sundays and our Mondays and our Tuesdays through our Fridays are rooted not as independent clusters, but rooted in the values, in the spirit, in the atmosphere, in the pedagogical shadow of the Shabbat that precedes it. In the last paragraph, he says, Nitztaveinu eifo lispar, we are commanded to count, miyom acherut, from the day of our freedom, v'ravachat ha'atzma'ut halu'umit, and the day of our national independence. That's when our count begins. V'lamadnu mikach derech klal, but we are taught here, Shahyasagim Ela, that these achievements, freedom, national independence, einam hatachlit, that is not our end. Those are not our final purposes. Those are not our end aspirations. Elarak hatchalat hashi'ifut halu'umit, they are the means of our spiritual national influence. We are taught Et haderech lahasagat matarit hasfira, the purpose of our counting of these 7 weeks, of these 7 Shabbat cycles. Sheva pa'amim tafil ha-Shabbat. Shabbat needs to have its exertion 7 times. Hamachanech al chaye hamaaseh hamlacha. It educates the way in which we work, the way in which we serve, the way in which we toil and exert our efforts. Sheva pa'amim nekabel aleinu at ol malchut Hashem. 7 times we accept upon ourselves the yoke of God. Nilmad, we learn. Sheha olam hanishlat bidei adam, that the world that is controlled by God, v'hasholet ba'adam, and controls man, humankind, natun l'shiltonenu shel borei olam, really sits in control of God. And of course, for Rav Hirsch, this message is evoked in our experience today when it could not be more clear that human beings can be made powerless in an instant, that we are forced to take refuge in our own homes and confess our lack of power as we scramble to get our hands around this crisis, and with the help of God and with the talent of humanity and the progress that we've made, we can handle it. For Rav Hirsch, the Omer teaches us that to get from freedom to commandment, to get from liberty from Egypt to Mount Sinai, we need to understand that those values, freedom, national independence, power, are just a means to our collective mission to be under God, to heal what is broken, and to fight for what is just. And with all of that influence of Shabbat through the week, of each day as it builds, as it snowballs through 49 instantiations leading to Shavuot, it is our hope that we will then reach that perfect day that Lou Reed sought, when we don't get anesthetized by human chemical mess, but our souls will soar with the messianic anesthetic provided from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, from on high. But until that perfect day, we stand and we count and we build towards perfection. I want to thank you for tuning in for the shiur this evening. I'm going to stop our recording. I'm going to